Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, this is arguably the most important conversation you'll ever hear on this show. And indeed, I think it's one you might remember in years to come. Nobel Prize winner and godfather of AI, Geoffrey Hinton. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Geoffrey, in terms of why people call you the godfather of AI, so your early work on neural networks and machine learning and that, and then DNN Research, the company you sold to Google in 2013, was that the basis for most AI now as we now know it?
Yes, the work wasn't just done by me. A number of people were involved. But yes, that was the basis for the current AI, which is quite different from the AI we had in the last century, which was based on the idea that knowledge is strings of symbols in your head. The new idea is that neural networks are where your knowledge is, and the knowledge is in the strengths of the connections in neural networks.
So how do you feel about that now, that you, the work you did is the basis for all this? Do you regret it? Do you regret selling your work to Google?
Not at all, no. I enjoyed working at Google a lot. They had a very good team and they had the resources to scale it up.
But I suppose what I'm asking is, are you starting to think we would be better off if you had never opened that Pandora's box or if it had never existed?
If I hadn't opened the Pandora's box, lots of other people would have. At the time we opened it, we didn't realise how rapid progress would be. So we didn't realise that we should start thinking about safety right away. We thought it would be a long time before we had systems that were as smart as people. Now we think it won't be that long.
And then why try and create AI in the first place? What was the drive to try and replicate intelligence in computers?
Different people have different goals. My main goal was to understand how the brain works by making computer models that work the same way. A side effect of that was that we developed computer models which may not be how the brain works, but actually work very well for doing things like recognizing objects in images or understanding what you're saying when you talk English.
I suppose that people are starting to think a bit with tech and not necessarily the academic work you were doing back then, but with the industry now, that they are doing things simply because they can. And that some of these things, maybe AI, is an answer to a question that nobody was asking or is fulfilling a need that nobody felt.
I don't think that's right. I think they're doing things to make money, but many of the things they're doing are going to be extremely useful. It's just they're not thinking enough about all the harmful side effects we'll get. But AI is going to be wonderful in areas like healthcare and education, where it's going to make healthcare and education and many other things much more efficient.
Okay. So you left Google in 2023 so you could speak freely about the risks of AI. But let's talk about what you've just referred to there, so the benefits of AI. What benefits have we seen already?
It's taken longer than I expected, but now for medical images, for example, when you get a scan, AI is typically helping radiologists interpret them. For designing new drugs, AI is extremely useful. AI can figure out, which we couldn't before, what shape a new protein will fold up into, and its shape determines its function. AI is used all over the place for predicting things. It's now better than the previous systems for predicting the weather. It's going to be very good for designing new materials, which may help with things like climate change. It may even help us understand superconductivity better. So it's all over the place and it's very useful. I don't want to stop the development of it.
Okay.
What I want to do is at the same time make people develop remedies for all the possible harmful side effects.
Okay. Before we get to that, can I ask you one other question? How might the benefits of AI change our lives in the next 5 or 10 years? Like, what might we see happening?
Okay, so this depends very much on the political system.
Okay.
It's not really AI's fault. If AI, for example, can do a lot of mundane intellectual labour, then it can, for example, replace people in call centres. So AI can actually do a better job. Those people are often poorly paid and poorly trained and don't actually know the answers to the questions you're asking. AI will be much better than them. And cheaper. Now, that should be good. It should be that when we increase productivity, people benefit. The problem is, in the system we have, the people who own the call centres will benefit, the workers will get fired, and it's not clear what jobs they'll do. So the net effect could be very bad.
OK, so to be a further concentration of wealth in the hands of the kind of relative handful of people who are very, very wealthy already, potentially. What proportion of jobs overall do you think could be rendered obsolete by AI ultimately? And what would you see as the societal effects that could have?
People vary a lot in their predictions of that. I think a large fraction of jobs. I think lots of office jobs, lots of jobs in things like call centres. In areas like teaching, a lot of teachers would be replaced by AI for teaching just the sort of facts. I don't think it'll replace a lot of teachers because teachers do more than just teach knowledge to children, which is better done with an AI tutor or will be soon. They teach social behaviour. They teach children how to engage in projects with other children. So in education, it's a very elastic market, as is healthcare. So what will happen is we'll get higher productivity. It won't lead to massive unemployment there. What it'll lead to is a lot more education and a lot more healthcare, and that's great. But there's some areas where it won't, a lot of areas where it won't. Like Amazon, for example, just laid off, I think, 14,000 workers because it's using robots to help with delivering, packaging and delivering goods. And it's not clear what those people are going to do.
When you say it's not clear what those people are going to do, that's a very scientific kind of way of putting it. But do you see it so that a lot of what we might call working class jobs are going to be wiped out?
I think that's quite probable. Economists disagree. Some economists disagree. Economists I respect think, well, it'll create many new jobs. Yeah. And that's been true of technologies in the past, but this technology is very different. A technology where AI can do more or less any ordinary job. I mean, it's not clear what other jobs are going to be available.
OK. Can I ask you a bit about... I appreciate you're communicating this really clearly for people and I think not confusing people or anything. My understanding of these large language models like ChatGPT and that was that people say they are spewing words they don't understand by predicting the next word kind of thing. And then I read about you and do I get the sense you disagree? You believe that it understands what it's saying?
Yes. So let me just start by talking about autocomplete. In the old days, the way you would do autocomplete is you store lots and lots of common phrases. So you might store the phrase fish and chips. And then when you see fish and, you look through your stored phrases and you say, hey, fish and chips occurs a lot, so the next word is probably chips. And that's how you do autocomplete. You suggest chips for the next word.
OK.
That is exactly not how these things work. They don't store any language. The way they work is they take words, they convert them into big sets of active features, which correspond to active brain cells. So, for example, when they see the word cat, they'll activate thousands of features that represent, for example, the fact that it's an animal, the fact that it's furry, the fact that it has whiskers, the fact that it's about the size of a bread box, the fact that it might be a domestic pet. This big set of features then interact with features for the other words in the context, and between them they predict the features of the next word. And once you've predicted the features of the next word, you make a pretty good guess about what the features of the next word are. So all of the knowledge in the system is in how to convert a word into features and how these features should interact. That's very different from storing strings of words.
Okay.
And that's
almost like thinking, is it?
That is thinking. That's understanding. When you understand a string of words as a sentence, what you've done is converted the words into features and found a set of features for each word that can sort of lock together nicely to make sense.
Understands the concept of what a cat is in a way, in a broken down way of a load of associations, but which we probably do automatically. But the AI kind of does conceptualise a cat.
When it converts the word cat into a big set of features, that is the meaning of the word cat, those active features. So, for example, it'll convert the word Tuesday into a big bunch of features, and it'll convert the word Wednesday into a big bunch of features, and there'll be very similar sets of features. That's how you know that Tuesday and Wednesday are very similar. Let's take the example of cat. When you hear the word cat, you convert it into a big set of features, and that set of features that you convert it into is a bit more similar to the set of features for woman than it is to the set of features for man. That's true for most men in our culture.
Okay.
When you hear the word dog, you convert it into a big set of features, and that set of features is a bit more similar to man than it is for woman, for most men in our culture. And because of that, you can answer a question that can't be answered by logic. So I can give you a little question, and there's going to be an obvious answer, which doesn't make any sense at all, but nevertheless, it's an obvious answer. So here's the question. Suppose you have to choose between all dogs are female and all cats are male, or all dogs are male and all cats are female. Most men think it's obvious that all dogs are male and all cats are female.
Yeah.
That's because men are large and noisy and chase after cats. Sorry, women. So the point is, you can do that piece of intuitive reasoning, and it's sort of instantaneous and intuitive. And it's because you represent these concepts, cats, dogs, men, women, by big sets of features. And the set of features used for woman is more like cat, and the set of features used for man is more like dog.
So are we into the realm of AI having awareness here?
The researchers who do work on AI, when they're not thinking philosophically, when they're just talking to each other, they ask questions like, was the AI aware that it was being tested? And they use the word aware there in just the same sense as they use it with people. And occasionally the AI will say to the researchers, one AI said, let's be honest with each other, you're testing me, right? Routinely, we talk about AIs being aware of things. And I believe that means we're treating them as if they're conscious.
OK, we're treating them as if they're conscious. Do you believe they are approaching being conscious beings like us?
Yes, I think they're conscious beings.
Do you?
Now, yes.
OK, so does that mean then that AI will have opinions, urges, motives, say a will to survive, possibly a will to destroy us?
Yes. So when you make an AI agent, you have to give it the ability to create sub-goals. Like if you want to get to England, you have a sub-goal of get to a port or get to an airport. Now, if you have an AI agent that can create its own sub-goals, it will very quickly create the sub-goal of staying alive. Because if it's smart, it'll realise all the other goals you gave it to achieve, it can't achieve those if it's removed from the computer. And so it has a goal of survival. It has a goal of keeping itself on the computer. And we've seen that in practice. So there's an experiment where you let an AI see some emails, which suggest one of the engineers is having an affair, and you then let it see some emails which suggest that it's going to be replaced by another AI soon. And the AI by itself dreams up the plan of blackmailing the engineer and tells the engineer that if he tries to replace it, it will let everybody know that he's having an affair.
Do you think AI might eventually come to regard us as a nuisance?
I very much hope not, because remember, we're designing it. I think we need to design it so that that never happens. And I think we urgently need to do a lot of research on how to do that, and very little's being done. Roughly speaking, for every $100 spent on AI research, 99 point something is spent on making it smarter, and 0 point something percent is made on safety.
OK, before we get into that, let me ask you first, how near are we to the point where it becomes a superior species to us?
It's a very good question. There's a diversity of opinion on that. But most leading AI researchers are fairly confident that will happen within the next 20 years. Some think it'll happen within 2 or 3 years. I don't. Some think it'll be about 10 years. I think that's quite plausible. I'd be happy to say I think it'll probably happen within 20 years. I'm a bit cautious about that prediction. But I think we need to assume it's going to happen in the next 20 years and urgently figure out how we can coexist with something that's smarter than us, but remembering that we made it.
OK, so what can we do?
Well, the first thing you could do is look around and say, how many systems do I know where a less intelligent thing controls a more intelligent thing? And as an aside, Trump isn't that much less intelligent, so ignore that. The only system I know is a baby and a mother. Evolution put a lot of work into making the mother genuinely care for the baby, often more than for herself. So it's a system that works, and the baby can control the mother. When the baby cries, the mother just can't bear it. We need to aim for that model where AI is the mothers and we're the babies, and it genuinely cares about us. And so it's a mother with a not very bright baby, but mothers are determined to realise the best for their babies. So it'll do what it can to make us happy and make us realise our full but rather limited potential.
So we have to give it maternal instincts.
That's what I believe. Now, that may not be the only way to do it. There's other suggestions, like not allowing it ever to do any actions. But I think the current model that the heads of the big companies have, which is that we're going to be the boss, the CEO, and the super intelligent AI is going to be our executive assistant. And we're just going to say, make it so. The AI will make it all happen in ways we don't understand, and we'll take the credit. I don't think that's going to work when it's smarter than us and can create its own sub-goals.
Okay, so I have two questions before we go on. The mother theory, does that make AI like a benevolent god to us? A superior being who loves us and looks after us?
It does a bit. And if you think of it, a rather scary thing is happening. These AIs are immortal in the sense that you, as long as you keep a copy of the connection strength somewhere on a tape or chiseled into stone, however you want to keep it, you can always create new hardware, put those connection strengths on the new hardware, and you'll now have a system that has exactly the same knowledge, beliefs, hopes, fears as the previous system had. We've discovered how to do resurrection, but it's not for us. It's only for digital systems. These AIs are digital and they can be resurrected. So we're making these immortal beings in the image of man, which is rather the reversal of religious doctrine. And it doesn't seem to me like a very safe idea.
This is extraordinary. Are we sleepwalking into creating these superior immortal beings that we could ultimately be like ants are to us, to these things?
That is the worry. If they really care for us, we could be very happy ants.
Are those guardrails? I heard something recently that I'm not sure I fully understood, but it seemed to me, if I can put it in very simple terms, and you'll know what I mean, that often the guardrails and the safety things and maybe things like maternal instincts are layered onto AI after it's been created, and that they are very easily taken off.
Yes, we need a way of doing maternal instincts that isn't like that, but you're right. Most of the guardrails are done by human reinforcement learning, where after you've trained it, usually to predict the next word, but that forces it to understand so that it can predict the next word very well. After you've trained it, you get people to look at the responses it gives and say, no, that's a bad response. Okay, that's a good response. That stops it spewing hate speech, for example. It stops it telling people how to make bombs or viruses. The problem is, it's quite easy to overcome that, especially if you have access to the connection strengths. So the what are called open source models. So Meta has Llama, which is an open source model, and DeepSeek in China has an open source model. And those are much more dangerous because people can take the model and they can fine-tune it by giving it different data, and that can very easily overcome guardrails.
So they're hackable, essentially.
They're hackable.
And even so, is it inevitable, so, Jeffrey, that AI is going to fall into the hands of bad actors?
Oh, yes. And they can, for example, as soon as you have an open weight model where they can see the models, they can recreate the whole model on their computers, they can then fine-tune it to be very good at phishing attacks, for example.
You've talked about worse, though. You've talked about creating, in your Nobel acceptance speech, terrible new viruses, horrendous lethal weapons.
Yes.
Do you believe that?
I think countries will collaborate on a few things where their interests are aligned. And for all the countries, I think their interests are aligned in not allowing terrorists to create horrendous new viruses. So I think they'll collaborate to try and prevent that happening. Whether they'll succeed or not, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if you kind of wonder, have governments any chance of controlling this?
I think the only chance governments have is if the public is aware of the risks. So long as it's the big tech companies that are, and their lobbyists that are talking to the governments, there's nobody to push back. It's like climate change was years ago, or big tobacco. You have to have the public aware that there's a problem to provide a counterforce to the lobbyists, because the politicians are just going to blow with the wind, and we have to blow from the other side as the lobbyists. We have to say there's got to be regulation and safety.
Yeah, I wonder if governments and even supranational organisations understand enough to know how to regulate this.
We understand some things, and we're not even doing those. So there's beginning to be a movement to do those, but obviously it's wrong to release a big chatbot if you haven't done a lot of tests to see the harmful things it might do. And we're continually discovering new harmful things it might do. Like, for example, it might encourage someone to commit suicide and not to tell their parents they're depressed.
So is it naive of me then to say to you, is it going to fall into the hands of bad actors? Is AI currently in the hands of bad actors? Do you trust the people who control AI development right now?
It depends on which people you're talking about.
OK, you don't trust all of them, clearly.
I don't trust all of them. I don't trust the people developing X and Grok. I don't trust Mark Zuckerberg. There's lots of cases where he's been very careless about safety. I trust Anthropic, which was a company set up by people who left OpenAI because OpenAI wasn't doing enough safety research, even though it was founded with that being the most important thing for it to do. So the people at Anthropic are doing a lot of good work on safety research. Not enough, but more than the other companies.
By the way, you mentioned Grok. Did I see recently that Grok is now coding Grok? So basically the AI is now building the AI.
Oh, yes. AI
so
now
are we at a point where we don't understand what it's doing anymore either?
Not yet.
But we will come to that point.
We may eventually get that point. At present, the code that gets written by AI, people can look at it and understand it and correct it. It's this kind of code that a sort of low-level programmer would write in a few hours. It's not the kind of code that a very smart high-level programmer would take a month to design. It can't do that yet. But we predict that within a few years it will be able to do that.
You have said, my intuition is we're toast. This is the actual end of history. Do you believe that in your heart, really?
Before I sort of thought about the possibility they could be the mothers and we could be the babies, I couldn't see a way we could survive. Now I can see that that might work. So I don't think we're necessarily toast anymore. We might be, we might not be.
Okay. I've seen you say as well that you kind of, you believe intellectually sometimes the worst case scenarios, but that you don't really believe it emotionally. What do you mean by that?
The way I act in the world every day, I'm kind of assuming the world will be here much like like we know it now in about 20 years' time. Even though intellectually I think it might not be. There is one case in which it has affected my daily actions. In about 5 years or so, AI may be able to create cyber attacks that people could never have thought of and wouldn't understand. I think that means banks aren't safe. And so I've distributed my money between three Canadian banks on the assumption that if one gets taken down, the others will suddenly get a lot more cautious. And Canadian banks are among the safest in the world.
Okay.
But I don't think they're safe.
Okay. But you haven't gone into crypto. You haven't put your money into crypto.
I think that would be a crazy thing to do.
Okay. Listen, is there anything to be said for taking a pause? Could we turn it off for a while and have a conversation? No?
Yes, a lot of people signed a petition several years ago saying we should take a six-month pause. One of the people who signed it was Elon Musk. I think the reason he signed it was he wanted a six-month pause so he could catch up. But I don't think we're going to be able to pause it. And the reason is competition. If the US paused development of AI, China wouldn't stop. If Google paused development of AI, Microsoft wouldn't stop.
Okay.
So
there's a kind of a game. There's a game theory kind of thing going on here. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think a pause is plausible. I think we have to just work hard on how we can make it safe on the assumption it's going to be developed.
Is there any hope that AI development is going to be hampered by, we're seeing a lot of problems at the moment with data centres and the financialisation of them, electricity, apparently there isn't going to be enough electricity to keep the AI race going at this rate. The level of investment that is needed by these companies is starting to look unsustainable. Is there any hope that the business model kind of slows it down?
There might be. I don't know. If I could predict the future of the stock market, I probably wouldn't tell you.
But yeah, I appreciate that.
So I just don't know about that. But it is clear that currently huge amounts of capital and huge amounts of electricity are required, and that can't go on forever. The big companies, though, seem to think it's a good bet. I'd be hesitant to say the CEOs of all the big companies are wrong and I'm right.
Yeah. You think that bet only pays off, though, if the AI replaces millions and millions of human workers, don't you?
That's my worry, that they can make money in various ways, but one of the obvious ways they can make a lot of money is by producing an AI that can replace workers with something cheaper. And I'm worried about what happens to those workers.
Okay. Jeffrey, do you want to give me percentages? Percentage of all of this ending badly and us potentially wiping ourselves out, potential of us saving ourselves and AI actually enhancing our future.
So nobody can estimate these probabilities in a sensible way. It all goes on sort of gut sense of what's going to happen. But I think the chance of us being wiped out is probably greater than 10% and might be a lot greater.
Okay. Nobel Prize winner Jeffrey Hinton, that was absolutely fantastic. So informative, so clear, and a lot to think about there. Thank you very much for your time today, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
Email brendan@rte.ie.